सोच विचार के साथ। मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।
वेलकम टू सोच विचार। टुडे वी आर गोइंग टू डिस्कस अ वेरी इंपॉर्टेंट सब्जेक्ट दैट्स वेरी क्लोज टू माय हार्ट। आई कीप सेइंग दैट वी डोंट अंडरस्टैंड इनफ ऑफ आवर हिस्ट्री and I'm very happy to report that I've got a wonderful historian here and a young historian, which is also very important because I try and make sure that we get some younger people too. This country is too old age and hierarchically defined. Today we have Ilhan Niaz. He's a very, very well-known historian in Pakistan, young in years, but well-known because he's written about 3 or 4 books. He's in Qaid-e Azam University. He's an associate professor there. Very productive, very prolific, got some good ideas. Welcome, Ilhan.
Thank you so much, sir.
Ilhan, I know you're working on a new book called On the State and During the British Raj, I think, which is a very important subject to understand if we want to progress. I think that's where our problems lie. We don't understand what we inherited. So, Ilhan, before we go there, just briefly say a few things about your career and how you feel about social science education in Pakistan, because I don't like to differentiate social sciences, history, economics, everything is kind of together. So just briefly, can you comment on that, your career and social sciences in Pakistan?
Well, I mean, as far as my career is concerned, I did my PhD from the city, and I also started teaching there as well and working there as well in the faculty. And eventually ended up, as you just introduced, as an associate professor. So I sort of started my career almost 15 years ago. So in that sense, I was just 22 when I joined the university service. And it's been a very interesting experience working in Pakistan and also seeing, in a way, a lot of fresh publishing going on, a lot of new ideas being coming out from Pakistani scholars, and that's what's reflected in the volume of publications. You know, if you hop down to the Oxford University Press, mm-hmm. you'd find a lot of work that's been published by Pakistani scholars on a wide range of subjects. In our own little history department, practically everybody has at least one, if not two, internationally published books out, mm-hmm. and we're quite obviously proud of that fact as well. When I think of the social sciences in a broader sense, however, I feel that the quality of research leaves a lot to be desired. And our universities, obviously, I can speak from experience, reference, Qaid-e Azam University, we have a lot of very serious problems in the sense that our approach towards research in the social sciences is that we leave it to the individual to have a kind of a volunteerist model of organizing their research and somehow, you know, managing things on their own. There's very little institutional support, let us say.
Okay, Ilhan, I think you made some very interesting points. You said that the problem in social science research is the low quality, and that happens because of the way we are conducting research, because of the research process, because there's too much volunteerism or whatever. Can you explain that a little? Because that's very interesting and very close to my heart. So I'd like to understand that.
Dekhiye, uska basically ye hai that if you're a social sciences researcher in Pakistan, mm-hmm. you're basically on your own. Mm-hmm. At Qaid-e Azam University, you have the, let us say, good thing that the university does not obstruct your research, mm-hmm. though it may not do very much to help you with it. Mm-hmm. At other universities where you have, let's say, a strong military control element or a corporate private sector control element, mm-hmm. or they're totally geared towards teaching and turning out large numbers of marketable mm-hmm. degrees, mm-hmm. so you probably have a strong disincentive to engage in any kind of creative research or other mm-hmm. such things. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, if you want to do research in social sciences in Pakistan, you essentially have to assume that there will be either no institutional support or very little, mm-hmm. or you may even have to assume that there will be a lot of institutional resistance to you doing anything original or mm-hmm. anything creative.
Okay, but Ilhan, the way I look at it, in the way I look at it, in the West, where research is doing well, the institution and the universities don't really get into either the quality or defining the agenda or whatever. Most of the research in the West is guided by peer pressure, either through associations, professional associations, or through the journals, or through some kind of review process, or through commenting, reviewing, etc. Do we have such things in Pakistan, or is that a constraint?
The thing about Pakistan is mm-hmm. that if, let's say, you are an academic working as a professional academic, which mm-hmm. is to say you're in the university system, mm-hmm. then you do actually need to have a certain number of publications which would be peer-reviewed or mm-hmm. published internationally mm-hmm. in order to advance to the next level.
Right.
However, the thing is that I think that the emphasis in terms of even the West's academic integrity, mm-hmm. the whole structure of academic publishing and peer reviewing and impact factor, etc., mm-hmm. It's a really very predatory business in the sense
right.
that the publishers, the political economy of publishing, mm-hmm. essentially assumes that there are a large number of people who will spend a ridiculous amount of their time and energy mm. producing papers, which mm. will, of course, be peer-reviewed and published in various prestigious journals or not so prestigious journals. Mm. And then hardly anybody will ever read them. Mm. So, I think an average academic journal article has maybe 10 readers. Mm. And there are exceptions, of course. Mm. The other thing is that some of our friends in the natural sciences or biological sciences, especially the last 10, 15 years, they've really become very adept at playing the game of citations and essentially pushing up citation counts, thereby generating the impression that their works are being widely referred to.
Right.
Obviously, in the social sciences, if you're publishing a book, that's a large intellectual construct. Mm. It's going to not get the same volume of references over a period of time as compared to, let's say, a very technical paper published by a natural scientist. Mm. So in many ways, social scientists in Pakistan, they are constantly on the defensive as well from the HEC side about their publishing. Mm. That, you have to go to the HEC and to the university hierarchies, wherever they may be, and try to sort of convince them, for example, ki agar maine ek kitab chhapi hai Pakistan ke upar, ya Hindustan ke upar, ya kisi cheez ke upar, it is worth more than two research papers, is what it's counted as.
No, that is an issue. I agree with you entirely, because HEC is taking too mechanistic a view of research, as well as too uniform a view of research, because research varies. Of course, design is a very different form of research. History is a very different form of research. Even economics is different from history, and engineering or physics is certainly very different. They run one experiment and get 20 publications. But I mean, there is a certain epistemology in all subjects, and we have to follow that, and there's a certain reporting procedure. Unfortunately, that is true. But tell me another thing that I find missing in Pakistan, and correct me if I'm wrong, that peer review, we think of peer review too narrowly. Peer review is only being reviewed for a referee journal. But I think there is also peer review where your colleagues review your work publicly, like reviewing your books, like having a public debate with you, or like engaging in seminars and conferences. Do we have enough of that? Is there, for example, even a Pakistan Historical Society?
Well, actually, there is a Pakistan Historical Society, and they do publish a journal as well. Mm-hmm. So you can find that online.
Okay.
And there are other, institutions that are also publishing history papers or art journal articles, etc. Mm-hmm. in Pakistan. Mm-hmm. So yes, we do have that.
Mm-hmm. But what about a debate within the Historical Society? What about, for example, can you identify two or three theses that have been put forward by Pakistani historians that have been debated?
As in, by the Historical Society?
No, by individuals. By individuals.
That, they organized a conference. Mm-hmm. In fact, we held a conference in collaboration with them at Qaid-e-Azam University in 2011, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, so 6 years ago.
so that, well, they have conferences like at different places. So, you know, one year it'll be here, one year.
But they do have regularly every year a conference.
So I don't think it's every year. It's every couple of years.
Okay.
It's a sort of history congress type thing.
Okay.
So there is that. But again, you know, I'm not a big fan of conferences per se, especially in Pakistan, because they tend to become, in some cases, even siyasi jalsas, where you have, you know, VVIPs coming in and making all sorts of statements, turning them into a political platform. And in other cases, it also becomes a problem because it's hard to get international people to come to Qaid-e-Azam University or to any other public sector university in Pakistan. I was part of a project that we hosted three successful international conferences at QAU, bringing people in from all over the world and also Pakistani scholars, etc., to QAU and having a serious discussions, no like VVIP statements, nothing of that sort, just hardcore academic conferences. So, yeah, we do manage to have some events. But again, there are very severe funding and other constraints, and it's very hard to manage anything over
but
here.
Alan, but again, you're saying you have, we have events. What I'm saying is, do we have theses, hypotheses, and debates? I find in my subject, for example, economics, in my subject, I'll give you an example.
Yes, sir.
In my subject, we have no debates. Everybody kind of agrees with each other because they agree with the World Bank and the IMF, and the IMF and the World Bank gives us themes and we follow them, right? And even if somebody writes something different, nobody reads it. And there are hardly anybody reviews anything, hardly anybody takes up a thesis that, hey, this is Ilhan's thesis, this is so-and-so's thesis, let me discuss it. That doesn't happen at all.
Well, in history that does happen, although of course it's not as widespread a discipline as compared to economics, and we don't have that sort of international discourse perhaps directly pouring into us either. So, for instance, there is considerable amount of debate about, let's say, partition, let's say, role of different leaders in the freedom movement, Muslim nationalism, what it is, when did it start exactly. There are debates also, of course, in terms of post-Pakistan politics as well, what themes to focus on, etc. But again, the thing is that the size of the historical community in Pakistan is actually quite small.
Okay.
You know, you can identify a few enclaves here and there that are producing good stuff. But broadly speaking, what I've unfortunately noticed is that history as a discipline has basically been consumed in Pakistan by Pakistan studies. That at literally the college level, the school level, at you know, all the way down to the bottom, it's basically Pakistan studies which masquerades as history. And I've experienced this as well, having studied at Government College Lahore, for example. Wahan pe bhi Pakistan studies ki course hoti thi, and it was a very, very, I would say, obtuse sort of experience. But the point is that that is how many people actually even experience learning about history in Pakistan. And that tends to either put them off or put them to sleep, or basically make them uninterested in pursuing history as a discipline. On the other hand, we have lots of people who want to go into international relations, for example, if you look at our admission statistics. So that's a very, very popular subject, you know, foreign policy, etc. And they do also have theoretical debates on other issues. So, I mean, there is an element of debate, but it certainly has to be a lot stronger than it currently is.
But tell me, I take that, but the issue is really that I'm currently doing a project that looks at the research system in Pakistan. And I'm very keen on that. I've been to about 20 universities. I've looked at, discussed with, I guess, about more or less 300 academics, the research issues and their research, etc. And it's been a lot of fun. But the one thing that I noticed, to give you a preview of my study, I noticed that there is, across disciplines, there is not enough collaboration in Pakistan. And people are focused on publications for the sake of they consider publication an end. when you ask them, what is your thesis? What is your theme? I mean, for example, when I think of people internationally, for example, my professor, Gary Becker, the very well-known economics of the family and human capital, that was his theme, right? And if I look at somebody else, let's say Robert Lucas, another one of my professors, his theme was monetary economics and, you know, macroeconomics, very clearly identified. And these people that I spoke to, they don't seem to have that. And they find this question very strange, that there should be one thing, a collaboration across Pakistan. They think of collaboration with international universities or agencies, but not across Pakistan. For example, NUS will not have a collaboration going on with QAU. QAU will not have a collaboration going on with... Now, there are exceptions, but in the main, no. And at the same time, people across departments don't seem to be collaborating enough in research. And the second thing I find, there are not enough seminars. They have conferences, which, you, as you said, are like tamashas, but not enough seminars. Would you agree with that assessment or would you disagree?
Again, obviously, there are probably not as many seminars at a Pakistani university that there would be at, let's say, a leading Western university. But yes, a lot of departments and other things at Qaid-e-Azam or other universities, they do regularly organize seminars and talks and authors and people coming and going, etc. So, I mean, that is a part of academic life.
Good.
But I think there's one thing which we often tend to miss out, that if you're working, let's say, at a place where you have a lot of different things to deal with in order to do your work, in which, you know, there are a lot of other issues that the institution faces, which, for example, causes it to be shut down for 3 months out of the year, for instance. That takes a toll over time on your ability to pursue any sort of research that requires you to be there to organize students, etc. You know, and also there's also the other thing that many of the, let's say, Qaid-e-Azam, the students that we get are not from very wealthy backgrounds. They can't, you know, afford to jet around the country attending conferences. They need support, etc. For that support, you have to basically get entangled with the HEC bureaucracy, you know, to get the funding, etc. Wo ek aur procedure shuru ho jata hai wahan par. So again, what I've generally found is, for example, that, you know, there is a tendency towards autarky across many disciplines, across many departments. So you do have enclaves which are producing good work, but those enclaves are not really talking to other enclaves, and they don't perhaps even feel that they have the energy or the resources or the inclination to go out there. You know, there are too many other things that they have to deal with as far as their own work is concerned. They think, yaar, agar, you know, maine kitab chhap di, yo ho gaya, wo ho gaya, paper ho gaya, bhi kaafi ho gaya. Ab main aur kya karun iske alawa?
Tell me,
do anything more than
Ilhan, if you had to make recommendations to the HEC to improve the system, or but more generally, what would you recommend? What are the three or four key things that you would recommend to improve the research culture in Pakistan?
Well, the interesting thing is that I was briefly part of an HEC committee, which was sort of informally constituted to advise them on how to, let's say, improve research culture and standards, etc. And when we went into that committee meeting for the first time, it turned out that they'd been working on the natural sciences part of it for more than a year. And they had developed a very complex quantitative methodology that would basically track publications by tier. And based on the tier and number of publications, it would generate a blood count on the basis of which research would be deemed to have been good or proper or bad or inferior or average. And the social scientists that went there, myself and others, many of them from Qaid-e-Azam, some of them from Peshawar and other universities, we basically took very serious issue with what the HEC is doing and submitted our own proposal, which was that, number one, you have to de-link promotions from simple quantitative criteria for publication. Mm-hmm. And we made the case that, for example, if you are, let's say, a historian in my discipline, and you are not publishing a book for some reason. Well, in history, being a historian without a book is a very, very strange thing to be.
Right.
That is, you know, in history, in that discipline, having a well-published book is the gold standard by which you can judge the quality and the authenticity of historical research. So, if you want to promote people as a full professor or an associate professor, you should require them that, all right, you must have at least one, if not two, internationally published books. And don't, like, insist that, you know, you need to have 15 papers or itne conferences or baki. I mean, that's like, in a sense, you're just encouraging them to cheat the system. We also talked about the importance of research ethics, the importance of basically rewarding behavior which is genuinely productive and disincentivizing what we said were essentially corrupt practices. For example, Pakistan mein ye aam hota hai. It's one reason why I stopped publishing in Pakistani journals nearly 10 years ago. And that was basically that Pakistani journals mein the editor and the members of the institution who are publishing the journal, they are themselves publishing articles in their own journal. And this is true across the board. So, for example, we said that, all right, if you are working at Qaid-e-Azam University, then you cannot publish more than 25% of your articles in your own institution or own institution-affiliated journals. If you want to publish, publish outside, either abroad or outside, at least at another Pakistani institution. You can't just sit here and keep on sending, you know, research papers to your own institution. Now, what happened was, of course, that when we gave these recommendations, we were basically never called again. And I can send you the whole recommendation.
Please do. But Ilhan, now, let me just quickly...
Immediately dropped.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Because they're just not interested.
Sure. No, they're not. But I think, quite frankly, we, as whatever Pakistani thinkers, etc., must identify... But I think... Let me step back. I think we've got a very good situation in the sense we've got 200 universities set up. And we've got faculties now, I mean, not there yet, but at least fledgling situation happening. And we've got some people interested in research. Yes, they've got the wrong signal, but they're there. Now, my sort of preoccupation is to try and think through how we can make the system work better. And I keep thinking about it, and this is the reason why I'm doing this research. Let's forget about the HEC, let's forget about other things, but just purely intellectually. What do you think we should do to make research work better?
So, I mean, purely intellectually, so, I mean, you can think up of any number of things that may be applicable in the abstract. For example, one problem that we have in Pakistan, and this is true across all disciplines, is that our education system and our cultural system basically does not accept the legitimacy of the epistemology of the post-Enlightenment world. And over the last 30, 40 years especially, we have essentially been programming our younger people to very aggressively reject that modern epistemology, scientific methodology. So one of the problems that we have is that we have a crisis of worldview in Pakistan. You, of course, have a lot of young people, and I know economists love talking about the youth bulge and middle-class consumption, and, you know, we're selling more split air conditioners than ever before. But the thing is that the worldview of our society is essentially that of a culture in the Iron Age. And we would like, of course, to have the lifestyle of the modern industrialized West. We would like to have that, you know, standard of living. But what we don't seem to realize is that in order to actually bring about that standard of living, you also have to have a much more humanistic worldview, a much more rational
worldview. Good point.
And the education system at the lower levels, I mean, you know, I'm at the university level, so by the time students get to me, they've already been through 16 years, 14 years, depending on what program they enter in, 12 years of very, very serious, what I would call miseducation or maleducation.
And, but Ilhan, I've got another problem.
Maleducation has one component. One is, of course, the epistemological problem. And the other, of course, is the technical problem. Ke chale ji, theek hai, aap jo hai modern world ki epistemology ko nahi accept karte. Kam az kam, bachon ko likhna, padhna aur ginna jo hai, sahi sikha dein.
Let's give them skills.
Basic skills de dein, taaki jin mein se thoda sa kisi mein spark hai, wo khud ja ke seekh le.
So, but Ilhan, let me tell you another very interesting thing. I just had a student come over to see me, you know, asking for advice or whatever. And I'm surprised. This guy's got an MA from a major university. I won't talk about the university. Let's not do that. MA from a major university, one of our best and oldest universities. He's got, he's got reasonably good education given Pakistan. I'm not saying that he's eaten or harrow, but he's still got a good education vis-a-vis Pakistan. What surprised me in talking to him was that he didn't even know who Plato was. He didn't even know who Lee Kuan Yew was. I mean, that's really strange that a guy can go through almost 6 to 8 years of college and not know even this modern trivia. Right? So I'm.
But that's not strange at all.
I'm sure the faculty is also failing.
Let's say
somewhere.
We interview students. When we interview students, for example, what we find is astonishing things that, you know, there is someone who will have, let's say, 80% marks, sometimes, you know, a very high GPA in a subject. And you ask them elementary questions about that subject. And they just stare at you as if you're talking to them in Greek or something. And they just don't know that, you know, people who have degrees in, a BS in economics, etc., you can't talk to them about, let's say, Adam Smith or Ricardo or Mills beyond, if, you know, thoda sa yaad reh gaya textbook ka, wo aapko bata denge. But they're not really, they might be literate, but they're not really educated. And that's a very unfortunate situation, which is why, you know, I mean, our productivity is declining relative to peer economies. That is why you have so many other problems as well, that you get young people whom you are churning out, many of them, of course, with degrees, many of them without them. And they can't really do very much because the time they have spent in our educational institutions has not really added that much value to what they know, what they understand, what they are able to think, how they are able to explain themselves.
So it's a crisis. So it's a crisis that we must face up to. Okay, now with that, but then we are used to calling everything in this country a crisis. There has been a crisis in education ever since this country was born. I don't think a culture is for education. We've treated research as an output, much like in a meat shop or in a factory. We have no conversation in research. We have no thoughts in research. We have no thought leaders. We have no academics who are ready to engage in a conversation. We do barren research. We are too egocentric to converse with each other. We are too individualistic to have a conversation. We all want to be the champions in our own areas. We don't believe in peers. We don't believe in peer networks. We all want to be individual champions. We all have our own little silos and we live in silos. That is not research. Research is when you're willing to give the other guy the benefit of the doubt that he has an idea too, and not the only way to pull him down is not to engage in ad hominem attacks. I have seen even in drawing rooms, universities, and WhatsApp chats, people trying to knock the other guy down by ad hominem attacks, not even entertaining the idea that is presented. We really need to develop a research culture. We really need to begin to understand what research is. Research is questioning and trying to answer. Research is identifying problems and solving problems. Research is developing new theories, new ideas, new ways to imagine the world. And research is being compassionate to new ideas being put out. Unless we develop this culture, there will never be research in this country. Thank you, Ilhan. We shall talk again soon.
सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है।